Seb, tell me how you've met Gavin, how you know Gavin, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Jay. So I actually came to know Gavin. We started speaking about Emma Bartley, who's a fantastic SAP program manager that worked with Gavin at his time at Newcrest. And after she moved on from Newcrest, I reached out to Gavin to kind of get a little bit of an understanding of what Emma was like, because I was working with her at the time. And she'd recommended me to speak to him. And I was really impressed with Gavin's kind of background, his profile. He's no stranger to podcasts, so he's no stranger to this type of environment. He's been on a lot of panel discussions. He's also an executive chair of the SOAR Group, or was an executive chair of the SOAR Group, sorry. And I wanted to kind of bring him on to get a little bit more understanding of kind of his role as a CIO and some of the kind of insights that he has.
Welcome to the new and improved Configure It Done podcast. The Configure It Done podcast is now a place where we interview senior thought leaders in the SAP space across Australia and New Zealand, and the aim is to tap into their knowledge so we can pass on their insights to the listening SAP community.
This podcast is in partnership with the Black Dog Institute, who aim to create a mentally healthier world for everyone. If you wish to donate to the cause, please click the link below.
Excellent. So can you tell us a bit about that background, Gavin? A bit of context for those listeners that may have not come across yourself before.
I've had the good fortune to have some great roles over many years as a technology executive in places like Horizon, Optus, most recently Newcrest, and going even further back, I worked at places like Oracle, the BBC, and Reuters through the 90s in the UK. In my most recent role at Newcrest, I was the CIO for nearly 10 years. I was at Newcrest for 11 and had the good fortune to work with a wonderful team in a great business where we were able to achieve a lot of really good things with technology, enabling the business strategy and the objectives of the company and really making a material difference. And Seb touched upon Emma. Emma was one of many people in a team that was really focused and strong team, values led, and really wanted to do really well, and they did. They were fantastic.
Quite a few times now, and we've talked a little bit about your IT philosophy. I think last time you mentioned simple is better. I'd be really kind of interested to kind of get an understanding of what that philosophy means to you, and kind of how you've came up with that philosophy.
Yeah, so I'm a real believer that complexity is what kills you in technology. When you have complexity in the technology stack and the additional skills that you need to run that, and also the number of suppliers as well. I mean, your own time and that of your teams is finite, and how you spread that, you really need to think carefully about that. And I'm very much of the view that complexity makes you slower. It makes you, it makes it harder to do things. It makes you much slower when working through it. It costs more, it's really harder to focus on what areas you should be looking at. And when things go wrong, it's harder to fix as well. When you're talking about multiple platforms, multiple cloud providers, multiple networks, multiple pieces of software, it just becomes that complexity of all the different handoffs and how they interact together is really hard. And if I look at that in the Newcrest context, you can imagine Newcrest has mine sites all around the world. You might be using a mobile app on a tablet on an island off the coast of Papua New Guinea that connects via a satellite link back to a ground station that eventually connects to a cloud, a hyperscaler data center. That alone is complex enough. When you add in a lot of other hops and jumps and authentication and other things with multiple systems, and the same, I touched upon skills. Quite often with these niche legacy systems that drive your complexity, you'll find there's one critical person who has the skills to do that. And whenever you want to make any changes, their bandwidth often is, the constraint that stops you from doing more than you would like to as well. And it's also a constraint on their career because they're unable to maybe branch out into other things because their time is in such high demand.
Sure, sure. We're going to touch on that simplification piece in a bit. That's a topic that SAP are pushing forward at the minute. I'd love to touch on the people element of it. But before we get into that, I think in your previous company, when we caught up, you mentioned that over 30% of your applications, you closed down or you chose one application. What's the thinking behind that move?
Well, that was very much a complexity and a cost play. When I joined Newcrest, shortly after that, the gold price fell by about 25% in a very short space of time. And the company went through some quite painful restructuring. And to give you an idea of the scale, the IT team at the end of that restructuring was a third of its former size from when I started. But as part of that, we had a really hard look at our application portfolio and what drives the infrastructure needs underneath that as well. And we saw the sprawl of multiple applications supporting the same business process, in some cases the same application, but on different versions or with different configs. And what we did was we went through that portfolio, both out for the applications out at mine sites as well as the enterprise applications back at head office. And we classified them using the Gartner time classification system, where T is for tolerate, I is for invest, M is migrate, and E is eliminate. And the idea there is invest is your strategic standard. A tolerate's one where, you accept that it exists. It may be a bit of complexity, but there might be good business reasons for it to be there. And I'll give you an example in the mining context of that, where you may have a mine site that has a short mine life. It might only have two or three more years left to run. Mm-hmm. Does it make sense to change things, or do you just accept things the way they are at that mine site because it's not worth investing scarce dollars and resources into changing that? Migrate is where the app still performs and supports a crucial part of the business process, but you want to migrate that functionality to either a tolerate or an invest app. And eliminate is one where it's one you can just get rid of straight away. And we worked through the list that we came up with as a result of that and gradually managed to eliminate 30% of our apps. And that, as well as setting us up in a better place from a cost point of view, a better place from a skills point of view, better place in a supplier management point of view and partner management point of view, it also set up the platform for us to be able to do some really good things in the future around the digital space and around data, because it led to a much cleaner set of source or databases of record that in turn provided great data sources for us to do clever things with AI and data in the future.
Sure, that's brilliant. Okay. Continuing on that kind of simplification area that we're speaking about, Seb and I have spoke to multiple organizations that, they've got that mindset that they would struggle with simplifying systems. Why do you think other companies struggle with that when it comes to simplification?
I might just reflect on what made us successful, it'll make the analogy be clear then. At Newcrest, we had a burning platform where the company was going to go out of business if we didn't change. And the restructuring and the focus on cost and also lifting revenues as well meant that there was a clear business imperative to do something about complexity and cost across the board. And we took full advantage of that. And I also observed that noisy stakeholders, when they're worried about keeping their own job, are probably less likely to fight you about losing their application under those circumstances too. And we certainly did take full advantage of that.
Okay.
The other advantage we had in the delegation of authority, which is a document that the board approves, that determines who can spend what, who can hire who, and all those sorts of authorities. I had an authority where I had to approve any new system, app, platform, piece of data science. So I had a right of veto over any new things that would come in as well. And not many companies extend the DOA to actually extend to system choices, but it was very, very useful push back on things that were going to add to complexity, having improved as well. I also think that, you know, many companies are so busy, the complexity that they have means they're so busy fighting just to keep their head above water from the day-to-day of incidents and problems, delivering projects, that it's really hard then to get out and spend the time on the front line of your business, engaging with stakeholders, explaining the benefits to them. And when let's say, I'll pick a very mining specific example, one site has one downtime accounting system, and downtime accounting is how you measure loss from capital equipment when it's unavailable because of a failure.
Yep.
And another site has a different one. One of those is a more modern app and better supported, and the other one is an older version on underpowered hardware, on older databases. And you explain to the individual that you can have the newer app, and when it comes to us having the scope to spend more time on them, us spending the time on one app for two or three sites is a lot more likely than us spending a fraction of time on three apps for three sites.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just having those really honest conversations around there's something in it for you, there is going to be a bit of change, there's a standard that's in place for the company, so you will have to change, but we want to make that a change that was one that you embrace rather than one that you resent.
Mm.
Really does make a difference. And to give you an idea of how well my team were on the front foot out at the front line of our business, we had a Net Promoter Score rating with our site general managers, and site general managers are the people who run the different assets or mine sites. Each year, they're on or around 8 out of 10 every year, and that reflects, you know, the alignment that the team had. And, you know, it wasn't always aligned. You know, we had our disagreements.
Sure.
But there was overall a really good degree of alignment. The people at the mine sites felt that we were there to support them, not there to impose upon them. And as a result, it made those conversations a lot easier. So, you know, there were some structural things at Newcrest, you know, having company approved standards, having a delegation of authority, having a burning platform. And then there was the engagement out in the business that we used. And I'd also add as well, at Newcrest, we didn't have a business engagement function. Each function, and Seb spoke of Emma, and I'll use her as an example. Emma led all of the SAP work and enterprise application work at Newcrest. She had accountability for strategy and planning for that space, for project delivery, for day-to-day service delivery, and for engaging her stakeholders as well. So when she and her team engaged her stakeholders and said, we would like to do this, they were able to follow up because they own the resources to make it happen as well. Mm. And they also own the commitment. So, you know, it's, I think that also made a difference in the Newcrest context.
So it's almost like setting a vision, here are the goals, creating that accountability, and then just constant feedback with the Net Promoter Score as well. Yeah.
I mean, and we, my team and I all shared a chunk of our bonus riding on that Net Promoter Score. So we, you know, we very much bared our throat to the business for and took the risk of backing ourselves to deliver what we needed to do.
Wow.
That makes sense. I think it's good to have a kind of cohesive team, but also I think communication is key in all of these things, right? If you don't have that clear line of communication, there's obviously things that kind of go wrong in the long run. I think you were talking a little bit earlier around obviously managing stakeholders and kind of having differing opinions. How do you typically manage those kind of stakeholders that potentially you don't see eye to eye with, or that may have very kind of strong opposing views?
I've largely sent people out to where they live. And, you know, I mean, I could go and use the authority of my title and position in the company to push that. And it doesn't mean that that the individuals who disagree are going to respect that. But I very much encourage the people who work for me to go and have those conversations as part of their own development, to engage, listen and understand. And often it was not just go there with one mission. It was go there, understand their world, understand their context, and identify other ways we could help them. So perhaps we can help you with this. You know, do you need some more Power BI dashboards that will help you in delivering on your safety goals? Would you like to try some robotic process automation to, minimize the amount of boring admin that you do each month? Yeah. And I think just engaging with people where you're not there just to do something bad to them. You're there to actually support them in the whole rather than, and we're going to disagree in the margins is a much better place to be. And the people in my team were very much empowered to go out and make those offers and follow through on them. And we had a really strong operating system in terms of following through on, are we delivering in day-to-day service delivery? Are we delivering in projects? Are we delivering on our promises and commitments to our different stakeholders? And we very much had a philosophy that we failed as individuals and we succeeded as a team. So even if you made a promise that one of your colleagues had to keep, there was a strong team first orientation that meant that your colleague would support you in that too.
Brilliant. So it's almost like just continually building trust, isn't it, with the business? Yeah.
And mutual benefit as well, I guess.
Yeah. Definitely. Gavin, you've touched on a lot of your leadership, your style there. But if you had to define it, or you had to define your approach to leadership, so others can learn, what would you say that is?
I've had the really good fortune for working for some fantastic leaders in the past, both at Newcrest and beforehand. And one of those individuals, a gentleman called Laurie Turner, I worked for 13 years. I mentioned some of those places of Coles, David Jones, Optus, Horizon. I worked for him in each of those places. And Laurie was someone who succeeded by treating people with respect. I mean, many execs tend to be in it for themselves, at least some of the time, if not most of the time. And Laurie succeeded by having values-led teams that respected people. Everyone loved Laurie and they really wanted to do well for him because he was a good person. And he very much shaped a lot of my views on leadership. I have to admit, I was probably more of a run-fast, go-hard kind of individual when I first started working for him and came to appreciate the value that everyone's differences bring within the team. And when I first started at Newcrest in the role of CIO and I had a new team, I didn't talk about how bad business conditions were. I didn't talk about what we had to do. I talked about great teams, great leaders I've worked for in the past, and how can we create something like that we're proud of in the future. And that led to us identifying a set of behaviours around what kind of leaders we wanted to be and what kind of team, broader team we wanted to be a part of. And it was very much focused on having a burning desire to be really successful and wanting to respect and support the individuals inside our team. I think the other side, and I talked about respecting the differences, that having respect for people who come from different backgrounds, do things differently from you, think differently from you, and respect the fact that they bring a different value than maybe you bring to bear, and you can make the 1 + 1 = 3 in those circumstances. We then gave those behaviours to a group of people that I came to call the cultural ambassadors, and they were level one employees and contractors who then took those behaviours, reworked them a bit, and then linked them back to the Newcrest values. And that was very much the cornerstone of what led to much of our success. So I think inclusive and values-led teams is still very much, you know, a big part of my leadership style and that of the people around me. And I also think that teams own culture. You know, as a leader, you can set the tone, but so you've got to very much let them take ownership of that and drive it, and also let them hold you to account for you know, the culture that you've committed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd also go so far as to say you've got to be really aware of big moments when you're setting tone for culture as well. Early in my time as CIO, we discovered that an unnamed systems integrator who had a private cloud for us hadn't been backing anything up. And this had been going on for a few months. And fortunately, it was an IT-related, an ITSM, IT service management tool that failed that highlighted this. And I was really conscious that the way I approach that, even though I was feeling acutely uncomfortable as sort of like barely months into being a CIO with the circumstance, and had some very uncomfortable conversations with my stakeholders around that. With my own team, I was really conscious to say, be calm, take your time. I'm sure you're feeling the pressure. I am too, and it's natural, but we need to get to the bottom of this and fix it so that we don't have an ongoing problem. So take the space, involve, don't try and fix it yourself, involve all the people that you need. You identify when you want to report back to me and I won't chase you. And I will manage the stakeholders outside the team who want an answer yesterday. And I think, you know, taking advantage of those moments to shape things. And the other part is, I think, being prepared to be vulnerable. I have a long history of mental health issues, which I've shared quite openly with my team and others.
Mm.
And I find that opens a door for other people to take a step towards you and see you more as a human. And it just makes you more relatable. And I think it creates a space where others feel that they can do that too.
Yeah, that vulnerability is power for sure.
Yeah, I think it's always good to see leaders that have that kind of hubris to actually be vulnerable in those types of situations, because especially when you look at leadership, and sometimes, you know, you talked about it there, you have a great mentor that obviously helped kind of push you into that direction. But I think leadership is obviously all about understanding how the other person's feeling to obviously come together as a team. And I think you've highlighted that brilliantly. I think through this obviously podcast, we've been talking about your kind of simplification ethos. We've talked a little bit about kind of, you know, what that looks like. Now, what would you say are some of the sort of benefits and kind of cost implications that had to your program at Newcrest?
Benefits wise, we benchmarked our costs every year using the Gartner cost benchmarking tool. And Newcrest was the benchmark in a number of the metrics in the natural resources industry. So that took in construction, agriculture and mining. To be, you know, a very large IT function in a not small, you know, it was a Newcrest before it was acquired by Newmont, was an ASX 20 company. That is an outstanding outcome. And I think that's a big part of, you know, the minimizing complexity. And we didn't really touch upon quite as much about minimizing complexity in partners as well. So, you know, you can actually focus on having a more meaningful relationship if you put most of your spend in a category towards one player. And it's often then possible to then have meaningful discussions around other ways to ease costs, you know, whether that's rebates and other mechanisms where, you know, you're in the same way on your credit card, you know, you get more points the more you spend. I think it's you can leverage that to get to a better cost base as well overall. And I never wanted to be the cheapest in every category. I just wanted to be cost competitive overall. So it wasn't about the cheapest price. It was about looking at the whole and appreciating that by managing the whole well, you could actually get to a very cheap outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the bigger benefit for us was being able to have consistent delivery excellence and deliver meaningful benefits to our business. So from a project delivery point of view, our team delivered over 90% of projects on time and budget every year. Our worst year was 91%. Wow. Most years were around the 95% mark, a little bit above or a little bit below. And finally, the commercial outcome. The team delivered over $500 million of additional free cash flow and other benefits to the Newcrest business through its investments. And a lot of that came from digital solutions in data and AI. And those solutions were very much enabled by the lack of complexity in the environment. So I talked about having one system earlier and feeding into that. It meant that when you created an innovation for one mine site, you'd go to another mine site, show it to them and ask them, is that something that would be useful for you? And then with a small amount of tweaking, you could actually switch on an AI or a dashboard that could lead to, you know, millions of dollars of benefits to that site. Yeah. So I think it's a when you go through the difficulty of getting there and then fight the fights to stay there, it can be really powerful.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying there around putting more into one supplier. We see that in the recruitment industry as well. So we've placed with 117 different SAP customers. And if I look at all 117, the ones where we've got, I guess, the cheapest margins is the one that puts more volume or just uses us exclusively or on a retained basis. So it's very, very similar. Very, very similar concept. Gavin, that was absolutely brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. I'm sure our listeners would have learned a lot about your leadership and taking those nuggets of gold that they can implement into their day job as well. One question we always ask at the end of our podcast, and you've mentioned already some fantastic leaders that either worked for you or you've been mentored by it. But is there anyone in specifically that stands out that we could invite onto the podcast and we can tap into their experience and share that with our listeners as well?
I think actually many of the people who worked in my team would be wonderful on this podcast. I mean, Emma is one. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is although I was in the role for a long time, many of my team were very capable to and were ready to go on to be a CIO in their own right. And I'm sure that a number of them will achieve that in their career in the coming year or two. So whether that's Emma or someone else, I'd recommend looking there, because I think future leaders are formulating their thoughts on what they're going to do when they get there. And I went through that process, and I was fortunate. I actually knew the restructure that led to me becoming CIO was coming for a few months, so I had time to sit down and write position descriptions, and I treated them like writing mission statements and stuff like that. I wrote everyone's PD in the new org and in preparation for that. So I'm sure that people like Emma and Bartley are taking advantage of that. And actually, just one thing, as you were talking about having more business put your way struck me as well. And we didn't touch upon it. I know that you guys play heavily in the SAP market. I'm a really big supporter of SAP's approach to clean core and innovating around the edges. And we certainly followed that at Newcrest. We did a lot of customization using Fiori and creating mobile apps and good end user experiences that were driven out of design thinking exercises. And I really think that that's the way of the future. I mean, SAP transaction experience. Sorry, I should have turned that to not, do not disturb. SAP transactional screens will continue to be ugly even in S4 or in RISE. And being able to innovate around the edges, I think, is the way for the future in SAP. So I'd add to that part of the complexity story too.
Excellent. Gavin, that was absolutely brilliant. I'm sure SAP would love that end part as well, and having many listeners listening to this. So, but yeah, listen, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing your insights, and I'm sure we'll speak soon.
Great. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Please like, share, comment, and subscribe to the Configure It Done podcast.